This is Jennifer for the KBOO AM News, and I'm speaking today with Jessica K. Taft, sociology professor at Davidson College and author of the book Rebel Girls, Youth Activism and Social Change Across the Americas. It's great to have you on the show, Jessica.
Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah. First of all, talk a little bit about the book. What's it about? How is the process of researching and writing?
Sure. So the book looks at teenage girls' participation in social movements in five different cities in North America, in San Francisco, in Vancouver, Canada, Mexico City, Caracas, Venezuela, and Buenos Aires, Argentina. And it looks at how teenage girl activists were really involved in different kinds of political movements, all sort of progressive movements, lots of different topics, how they construct activist identities, how they talk about what it means to be a girl, what it means to be a youth, what it means to be an activist, and how their ideas about those identities then impact the kinds of strategies and political actions that they go about using. The ways that they talk about being a girl influences how they think about how they do their activism and thinking about being creative, for example. They say, you know, girls are really creative, so our activism is more creative. So these kinds of identity narratives end up influencing how they go about doing political work. So I did interviews and observation with girls in these different cities with about 75 different high school age girls, so between the ages of 13 and 19.
You talk about the disenfranchisement of youth in traditional politics. How does this affect the type of activism that teenage girls choose to do and are able to do?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I think because they're so not involved in formal politics, state-based politics, right, they can't vote, and they're not really incorporated into any kind of formal political institutions. Political representatives don't really care what teenagers think, and they tend to talk about teenagers as apathetic. That means, then, that unlike a lot of adult organizations that are sort of always debating whether or not to be involved in legislative politics, these girls just don't even think about doing legislative politics or politics around the state at all. They mostly focus instead on community building, creating alternative institutions, working sort of outside of the formal realm of politics, because they know that there's really no way that they're going to have any impact in that space.
Yeah, and it seemed like you also talked a lot about how teenage girl activists felt the need to kind of step in where they felt like adult activists weren't kind of pulling their weight, or like adults weren't filling the roles that they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah, they kind of, it's interesting, they sort of set adults up a little bit like a straw man sometimes, right? They'll be really, really critical of adults. They'll say, you know, adults have given up, they're not idealistic enough, they don't really think that any change can happen. Well, to a certain extent, they may be right about some of that with some adults, and I think particularly in the Argentine context, a lot of these girls' parents lived through the disappearances and the dirty war, and they are really frightened and not engaged anymore for very good reasons. But a lot of girls, and I think young activists in general, tend to think that adults aren't doing things. And whether or not that's true, I think, is a little bit more debatable than their own perceptions of it. Part of their sort of sense that adults aren't doing things, I think, is partly based on the fact that they're not actually interacting very much with adults, because adults don't really think about interacting with these teenagers, right? There's not a lot of cross-generational and cross-age collaboration between adults and teenagers. So teenagers think, oh, adults have given up, they're not really doing anything. And adults think that teenagers are apathetic. And so we don't have any real kind of collaboration between adults and teenagers.
So this question kind of talks about that, too. In your opinion, are youth activists more or less effective than their adult counterparts? In what ways are their attitudes the same, and in what ways are they different? And I guess along with attitudes, what ways are their activism strategies and tactics similar, and in what ways are they different?
Interesting. I think that, I mean, the question of effectiveness is a hard one to measure, right? I'm a sociologist, so I'm like, what's the social science of it, right? It's hard to know what effective really means when we talk about social movements sometimes, I think. It's hard to say, well, is it effective if you accomplish your very big goal that you set out, or is it effective if you created some kind of new space and new community that is now able to organize long-term for some other kind of goal, right? So measuring effectiveness can be tricky. I would say that one thing, though, that is very effective about youth activism is the fact that it's surprising that there's a certain kind of power that comes from the fact that young people are generally perceived as apathetic. And so when young activists are really vocal and visible and present, that gives their voice a certain kind of weight with the media, right? It gets media attention in a way that adult activism doesn't. It can be sort of seen as less necessary or sort of silly in some cases, right? That adults may not get the same kind of attention that young activists can get from the media. But on the other hand, I think youth activism also can be dismissed easily as just sort of simple rebellion. They don't really know what they're talking about, right? There's this idea that young people aren't thinking through the issues sufficiently. Sort of place that I've come to more recently has been to really think a little bit about the potential benefits of young people and adults really working together. I think that young people are excited, they're energetic, they're hopeful, they're utopian, and I talk about this a lot in the book about how girl activists are incredibly utopian in their visions. They have big visions and are really idealistic about what they want, and that's powerful and really significant and something that adults often lose and really could stand to hold on to, that if they could continue to be sort of inspired by the creativity and hopefulness of young activists, that would be wonderful. On the other hand, I think that there are some things that adults have learned through experience that can be also useful for youth activists to learn from as well. But unfortunately, we live in a context in which adults and young people don't really have equitable relationships, right? Adults tend to think about young people as less than them, as less capable. So the opportunities for collaboration are really sort of limited by, I would say, adults' ageism and their sense that young people just need to learn rather than thinking that they can learn something from young people.
Yeah, that sounds like it really speaks to the difference in attitudes between young youth activists and older activists. But then I was also wondering, how do you see the tactics being the same and different? Like, do you see youth activists as, I don't know, being more proactive, or do you see them as just like employing different types of tactics?
Interesting. I think that, I mean, one of the tactics that I think young people use more than adults is education, that they're really intentional about education and educating, partly I think because they have this sort of student identity, right? So they really emphasize self-education, so educating themselves about an issue and their own sort of ongoing learning, but also educating their peers, educating other people about issues. And I think that's a tactic or a practice that adult activists also use, probably not to the same extent that young people do. I think also that young people have a kind of creativity around their tactics a little bit, right? The use of music and color and parties and celebration and this kind of politics of joy, I think, comes a little bit more in youthful spaces. But there's that kind of enthusiasm that ends up filtering into the tactics that young people use. But then a lot of the tactics are also very similar. I mean, I think that some of the institutions that young people are engaging with on a regular basis, right, like schools, they may engage in a school strike or a student strike rather than a worker strike. But in some ways, the tactic is similar, right? Or rallies, marches. So there are some tactics that I think are really common across different age groups and don't really vary based on age. But there are maybe sort of differences in emphasis.
Okay. What trends did you see across regions? How did the issues tackled and the type of activism practiced vary from country to country? And how would you account for that?
Yeah, they vary a lot. There's a lot of difference between the different countries that I studied, a lot of difference. I would say one of the most significant differences for me that was really important to document was differences in how the young people did political education. So in particular in Mexico and Venezuela and Argentina, so in Latin America, political education is really about reading and discussing and engaging in these ongoing political conversations, whereas in the U.S. and Canada, political education tends to be about very particular issues. So we'll look at a particular problem and say, here's a particular social problem, what are the various kinds of solutions to it? Rather than having these sort of ongoing systematic discussions about political structure, about social inequality, about classism, racism, homophobia, this kind of big macro theoretical level. And so that means that young activists in Latin America have a much more developed political vocabulary, whereas a lot of young activists I found in the U.S. and Canada feel really passionately about a lot of issues, but they don't always feel like they can explain them, partly because the political education that they do tends to be sort of issue specific rather than a little bit more holistic and macro, and there's less of these sort of continuous political discussions and political conversations. So that was one issue of difference that I thought was really significant between Latin America and the U.S. and Canada.
Do you see that as because in Latin America and South America, there's just like a lot more political and social upheaval, whereas that's not as prevalent in the U.S. as, and in Canada?
I'm not sure that I would say it's because of the upheaval. I would say that it has more to do with the political cultures, that all of the countries that I studied in Latin America are places that have deep political culture where people have often and always sort of engaged in this kind of intellectual discussion of politics, that politics sort of infuse daily life and discussions in a way that is not the case, I think, in the U.S. and Canada.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What was the role of gender? You talk about the girls that you interviewed as describing a girl active as binary. Can you discuss that a little bit? You talk in the chapter about girls kind of establishing and contending with their identities as being girls on the one hand and then being activists on the other hand. You talk a lot about how they describe there as being kind of like a girl activist binary, that the fact that they're activists kind of negates their identity as teenage girls. I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, this is sort of a sticky issue in a lot of ways because I was really interested in studying girl activists, and I got out and started talking to all of these people under the age of 18 who are female, who are activists, and they have really complicated relationships to the idea of girl. Most of the time, they would really sort of separate their activist identity from their girl identity. And so they would say, well, because I'm an activist, I'm not really like those other girls, right? There's always a kind of other girl out there, the girly girl, the girl who is stereotypical, only interested in parties, is self-absorbed. So they have all of these negative traits that they associate with girlhood. They have lots and lots and lots of negative perceptions about girls, and particularly other girls. So the girls are selfish, girls are silly, girls don't really care about things. So they'll say that because they're an activist, they're not like other girls, right? They're not a girl. Maybe they're a woman, maybe they're a youth, but they're not a girl because they're an activist. But at the same time, in other moments in our conversations, they would say that they were better activists because they were girls. So they would say that girls are a lot more responsible than boys, that boys are, you know, they'll say they'll show up to an event, but then they stay out too late, and so they don't come in the morning, whereas the girls are organized, they take care of everything, the work gets done, and so therefore they're better activists. Or they'll say that girls are able to and are encouraged to love community and to care about community, and that really motivates them to activism. So they have this tricky relationship to the category of girl. On the one hand, they associate it with all of these negative things, and they say, I'm not that, I'm not a girl. But on the other hand, in other times, they'll say, well, I'm better at being an activist because I'm a girl.
And you discuss this a little bit about the beginning. Compare and contrast the mainstream view of girls' individual empowerment with the empowerment within the activist communities.
Yeah, so one of the things that I was really interested in paying attention to and thinking about and wanted to really challenge is this idea that so many programs for girls really have, I think, that on the one hand is great. They're really interested in empowering girls. Right? They want girls to be strong, they want girls to be smart, they want girls to feel in control of their lives, to have better self-esteem. But so many of those approaches to girls' empowerment are really about fixing the girl, right? How do we make girls better, right? What can we do to strengthen girls, to improve girls, to fix these individual girls so that they can face the problems of the world? Whereas the girls that I study and the kind of empowerment that they're engaging in is really about social change, right? Rather than how do we fix girls so that they can be stronger and overcome problems in society, their issue and their interest is really in how do we work together to make a society that is good for everyone, including girls. So they're interested in structural change rather than individual change.
Okay, so like the girls that you talked to in the interviews, they saw themselves as more embedded in their communities and that like empowerment for their communities was empowerment for themselves and vice versa, instead of this.
Absolutely.
More,
yeah.
Cool.
And that the real work to be done is to make a world that works well for everyone, right? Rather than fixing girls to face the problems of the world.
Which doesn't really address,
right? Fix the problems of the world.
Yeah. And then finally, how does your work in the field relate to your work in the classroom? What principles of sociology did you see in play in this study? Super familiar with your other work. I just know that you're a sociology professor. And this book, like, I'm actually a sociology major in college, so I was really excited about that. But this book seems like kind of like an ethnography in some ways. And I was wondering, like, did you approach this, like, as a sociologist? Like, what schools of thought do you see?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm trained in, I would say, sort of four major areas of sociology. I work kind of right at the intersection of research on youth, research on gender, research on social movements, and research on globalization. And so this work for me is definitely, I mean, it's a qualitative ethnographic interview-based study that brings together those four fields, but that also, I mean, for me, and part of what's important about that is that most of the work that's done in social movements doesn't really connect with research on children and youth. There's not that much scholarship out there on children and youth within social movements. So I wanted to really address that gap within the literature and to look at teenagers' activism. We know a fair amount about college movements and student and university movements, but don't know so much about high school age movements. So I'm interested in sort of bringing those different fields together. I also, it sort of filters through in different ways, take a kind of Foucauldian perspective. I'm always really interested in discourse. So that plays out in the book in some pretty significant ways. I look at how people use and deploy different kinds of discourses and how those discourses of the self, the sort of process of subjectification and identity formation, then shapes their strategies and their practices and their political experiences. So I kind of work in this sort of post-structuralist discursive tradition of ethnographic and interview-based work. I really pay attention to language and narrative and terminology and the sort of stories that people tell of the self.
Yeah, I noticed in the chapter when you were talking about the girls kind of negotiating their girl identity and their activist identity, you were talking a lot about like how English is kind of devoid of different words to discuss girls at different stages. But then
yeah.
Spanish has all these middle ones. And I was thinking that seemed like a really like sociolinguistic perspective on the issue. Do you mm-hmm. see yourself as coming kind of like from that direction?
Not so much that direction, I would say. I mean, I much more of a sort of bigger picture of discourse, right, which looks at less the kind of micro dynamics of linguistics and more the kind of larger trajectories of claim making, particularly claims that are made by institutions and forces of power, and how those different kinds of claims, particularly sort of scientific claims, different kinds of governmental claims, media claims about who people are and how people should be construct those people.
All right. Well, I don't have any more formal questions, but if there's anything else you'd like to talk about the book, like maybe how it was received or any other chapters you'd like to discuss it all on air. That's all right. Well, Jessica, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
About peace.